Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to Bards of the Board. I'm Robbie.
I'm Jason.
And welcome to the table. We are so excited to have you guys here. Episode 11. 1-1. We're full on in double digits with normal episodes. Jason, how are you feeling?
I'm feeling good, man. I'm very excited that we actually made it to 11. Like, it goes up to 11 and we've made it to 11. Spinal Tap joke for those who know that. We've made it there. So
yeah, I thought about last week, or like our last episode, really enjoyed it. Hope you guys enjoyed it as well with the lists and everything. It definitely was a longer episode. Like, I had friends that I'll bring you guys behind the curtain. We record on Tuesday nights for this, and I had a friend, he was like, "Hey, when are you going to be able to play some video games after you finish your podcast?" And I was like, "Yeah, totally. We're doing a list episode, so I think it'll go a little long, but like, I have no idea." And then we ended up with an hour and a half episode, but you guys have been so kind in your responses and things like that. So we appreciate your feedback and messages that we've received there. And yeah, what a fun time. Yep. The more I thought about like Quacks, I'm trying to figure out, I'm going on a trip this week and someone asked if I'm bringing board games. And I thought, how do I pack up Quacks to fit in my suitcase?
It's so big, but you could take it out of the box and put it all in its bags and all those kind of things. So you could definitely make it smaller than what it is for the base game without the expansion stuff and for the four boards. That is true. That is the one thing about my Quacks box. I still have the original cardboard cheap inserts in there. I don't need them in there. I could just take them out, but everything fits there. But like, really, it takes up like a third of the, not including the player boards because they're a little wide, but the actual mass, even with the Board Game Geek pieces, isn't that much. So you could make it fit. That's what I follow board game content creators. I know who I follow. They will, when they buy games at places, they'll typically do that and put two games together. Or if they buy a brand new game, they'll go ahead and punch the game before they leave from like Essen or Gen Con, because that cardboard adds so much weight to their game. They'll keep the box intact, but then they'll put smaller games inside that box because now you have all this empty space. But just trying to save weight, I'm like, that's good feedback for you and I. I'll probably be driving there, so the weight won't matter. But if you're taking anything back, you may be flying.
We're definitely driving.
Yeah. Indianapolis, you have family there, I'm pretty certain. So
I sure do.
Shout out to John.
It's going to be fantastic. Yeah. So wanted to highlight a couple of reviews because we've jumped. We've gotten six more reviews on Apple Podcasts. I was going to check Spotify here in a second. But on Apple, DWeek46 gave us a 5-star review and said, "I appreciate the awareness that gamers have different mechanics that resonate with them. It's nice to hear discussion of mechanics and why it works or does not work for the reviewers. Looking forward to future episodes." And Melbourne Knoll talked about how his sister wanted to buy him a board game, and he was going to ask for Carcassonne, but listened to episode 2, and we recommended Cascadia, and he ended up going with that, which was, he's like, "I love Cascadia." So
awesome. So glad to hear that.
Yeah, we appreciate that. And we're at 22 reviews on Spotify. So guys, when we hit 50, we're doing a giveaway, and I said, "Hey, we're going to buy a copy of our number one game to give away." And then we ended up with the same number one game.
Yep.
So we've got two copies of Quacks of Quedlinburg to give away. Hope you guys are looking forward to it. But we don't just talk about Quacks here on the podcast, Jason. We talk about other games, obviously. So what games have you been playing lately?
I have been playing, along with the main game we're going to talk about today, which I played a bunch of games of, but I'm a heavy gamer if you've listened, you can know I like heavier games for sure. And the two games I'm talking about today are both a little heavier. One's kind of medium weight and one's super heavy. I'll talk medium weight first. We just played last night a game called Maglev Metro. It's basically about magnetic levitation trains. It's the city of the future. Mm-hmm. You're putting trains up. So that's the theme of it. But it's essentially a pick up and deliver game where you are making tracks and taking your little train around to pick up passengers and then drop them off. There's some rules about how you can pick up passengers, about where you can drop them off. They have to match the same color. The coolest thing about this game, the production's top notch. It's a little more pricey game because it's really good cardboard, nice metal trains and stuff in there. So it's already a little more pricey game. But the coolest thing about this game is kind of the action the action upgrade ability. Essentially, your passengers are little bitty meeples. And as you drop them off, you put them on your board and you slot them in spots. And based on what spots you slot them in, you now are increasing your ability. Like when you start the game, you can only pick up one passenger at a time. But if you put more people there, you can pick up to four. You can only drop off, you only drop off one person at a time, or you put more people there, you could go up to four. You start off with two actions, but if you put more meeples in certain roles, now you can get three actions, four actions, or even five actions. There, you can get a bonus points. That's such a unique thing, and it's probably not uncommon in board games, but I haven't played too many games in which you are upgrading your board with pieces you're taking from your board that stay there permanently. Super cool, super thinky. Definitely, the gameplay is not hard, but there's so much going on to do well at it. It's definitely a thinky game. Midweight for sure. Definitely not a beginner game, but you're basically on your turn. You're either moving to another station, you're building a track, you're picking up, you're dropping off. All that is really easy. The actions are, and you only have two actions per turn. I end up beating Elizabeth, not as bad as she thought I was going to, but she never added more actions. And I'm a guy who wants more actions. I just like additional actions in a game. So people who play me a lot know if I can get something to give me an additional action, like going to on Lords of Waterdeep, where you go play the intrigue card, and now you have an additional action at the end. I love that.
Viticulture, hire the hire the extras.
Yeah, for sure. I'm definitely like more actions. And so getting those additional actions were the difference in the games. Now, I had to invest time to get them, so that was my strategy to do that. But it was fantastic. It's one we'll definitely – it's not like the greatest game ever, but I don't play a lot of pick up and deliver. And when we say pick up and deliver, it's no kidding. Picking up something, moving it somewhere, and dropping it off is exactly what it sounds like. I don't play a lot of pick up and deliver games, but that was really fun. And I've wanted it for a while, and we've had it on the shelf of shame for a few months, and I finally got it off. The other game that we played, and I even did a post on the Bard's channel, and I sent you and Brad some photos of it, is a game called Teotihuacan. I think I'm pronouncing it correctly.
That is a reach.
Super heavy game. Like it is a heavyweight game, and it's a Euro game, and we've talked about this, but essentially Euro games are no chance. There's no dice rolling. There's no attacking. In Euro games, you all see everything on the board, and you're just seeing who can get there and do it and work the engine of that. The only chance in most Euro games is if there's a selection where you're getting cards out, like Wingspan. By default, it's really like a Euro kind of game, but the only uniqueness is the die roll of the food and then the bird cards that come out. This is similar. During the game, you're getting, I forgot what they're called, but basically getting tokens that can do things for you. That's the only chance in the entire game. The rest of the game, you're moving around the board and taking actions. The cool thing about this game, aside from the production as well, because you're putting this pyramid where you're matching symbols to get bonuses, is your dice, your workers are dice. So it's not a worker placement. It's a worker movement or a rondelle game. And in board game vernacular, rondelle is basically moving your piece around almost like in a circle to take different actions on that circle. That's kind of the rondelle mechanism. And there's eight spots on the board, and you move your dice to those spots. And by default, how you start the game, you can start with your dice going higher, but they typically start with one. And similar to Apiary that we talked about, the strength of your action at that spot sometimes is based on what the pips are on your die, what the number is on your die. Like if you have a two die or a three die or a four die, on some actions that matters with how many actions you can do or how many resources you get. There's some spots you go get wood, get stone, and get gold. If you're using higher number die, you just get more of those. If you take those actions to do the main action of each spot, then you upgrade your die as well. And similar to Apiary, once you hit a certain number, it doesn't go off the board, but it resets to the main spot, goes down to one, and you get a bonus action. But it also progresses the game, because it's essentially a three-round game, and that there's a piece moves, and when these two pieces, different things cause these pieces to come together, and then you have a scoring action three times. And I told Robbie this when Elizabeth and I played, we scored like close to 300 points each. We're like, this doesn't seem right, but it was a lot of fun and it was awesome. And then I read the rules. You just miss rules. When you play heavy games like that, you're going to miss some stuff.
For the first time, for sure.
And so the main thing we missed was essentially these pieces that move together, which are like a timer in the game. We were only moving it with an action that makes it happen, like the pyramid being done or you upgrading to six die. But technically, it's supposed to move after every single turn. So if a two-person game, if I'm a starting player, after Elizabeth's turn, she would move that piece. So it's a much faster game. And in a four-person game, the game is a little bit longer, but you're still taking the same number of actions. So we basically went from – I won like, I forgot, like 297 to 291. And then the second game, I won 125 to 100. So that's a lot of points less because we had a lot less actions. Teotihuacan is definitely one that we will definitely show you at some point, Robbie. It's a top 100 on BGG and it was released like 6 years ago. That's pretty good to be hanging out in the top 100. Yeah. And it's even had follow-ons from the same designers. It's called the T-Series again. There's, I won't even pronounce them. There's other South American inspired games in that series, but none of them have passed Teotihuacan. Super heavy, super fun. Definitely not a beginner friendly game. Definitely not a mid-level game. This is you want to sit down and think and work your way through it. Cause even the actions are so different. It's not even like basic action. So anyway, Teotihuacan, yeah. Fantastic game. I told Robbie like this right now, if I had to rate it, would be a double doozy or right below a double doozy. That's how much I love this game after two plays. It is so awesome.
Yeah, Teotihuacan for pronunciation, if you're going to look up this game, and once again, Bards of the Board Instagram, you can find us there. Teotihuacan. You're going to have to go back and type that out because y'all are not going to. And what's interesting, Jason, from like watching or seeing pictures of it, it feels like it's the theme pasted on, or does it kind of like, do you feel the vibe of it carrying through?
So from what if you're into history or I think they're set in, I think it's in the Mayan industry or the Mayan, where is it? Pulled it up. It's a travel back to a time to the greatest city in Mesoamerica. Witness the glory in the twilight, the powerful pre-Columbian civilization. I do believe it does a decent job of going after the theme because you're building up this pyramid that's from that time. And that's what those main white blocks are. You're getting cocoa, which was their main trade they did. So if you go to a spot, you can get cocoa very easily, thankfully. But if you go to a spot and there's already another worker there, you have to pay a cocoa. Like you don't have to pay the worker there, but you basically have to pay to go use that spot as well. So it seemed like it's as thematic as I could. See, it's not just a pasted on thing, right? So to answer your question, it's not like, let's have some cool actions and throw some made up stuff on there. Like the theme kind of fits because you can, at each space, you can either worship and get something or you can do the main action, which is like you're mining some gold or mining some stone or chopping down wood, or you can do this and worship and move up on these different temple tracks because you're worshiping different things there. So I think thematically, it's kind of there for sure.
Yeah, I'm finding the more we review games and the more we talk about games, it's like before I really started living at Jason's house for a month every year and dove deeper into this board game world, to me, I thought I knew board games pretty well and my eyes have been opened up. But even if you play a lot of games, but you don't talk about games very often, there are things that you will either not realize you love or like you think they matter to you and they actually don't, or vice versa. And I'm finding more and more that like, if you give me a game that the theme is not well done, it's hard for me to make the jump to like calling it a double doozy.
Yeah. I see what you're saying, man. Yep.
Theming matters to me a lot. If the theme isn't really like it as a splendor type deal where it's just kind of like, okay, it's there. I think it'd still be a really good game and there are going to be games that have really good mechanics and things like that. But I'm finding that to be more and more of a thing for me. And so that's not to say like, oh man, I'm going to probably hate Teotihuacan or something. It's just, you know, you find those things that matter to you. Like for you, if it has cars that do stuff,
yep,
it's probably already jumped a tier.
That's funny. It's funny you say that, but I could see that the more I got to know you, I could see how theme, it plays an important role for it. For me, and I try to get into theme, which is why I don't do too many narrative games. You have the RPG kind of background, so you like that life. There's a whole world of board gaming that are narrative-based games, heavy narrative. And I don't play any of those because in my house, I have to run those games and I'm not that guy. So if I need game that's going to run the RP, the narrative side for me, and then I just follow along, and there's a few of those out there, I could definitely see that. If I don't like the theme, no matter how good the mechanics are, I could see me not liking it. But the theme rarely, on the surface, if it's post-apocalyptic, sounds really cool, right? If it's something, if it's in the ocean, not that I dislike the ocean, but that's not going to draw. If it's dragon-based, yeah, new Stonemaier games coming out. Dragons, yeah, dragons are cool, right? I mean, come on.
Wormspan, I'm already like, the mechanics of Wormspan are going to have to be so bad for me to dislike that game.
I'm very excited.
Dragons and Wingspan adjacent.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
So, but speaking of what's interesting is, speaking of Splendor, I think I told you this, there's a Pokemon version of Splendor that's only released in Korea right now, but they say they're trying to bring it to America. So you can actually go import it. You can go buy it for like $80 on eBay, but it's Pokemon Splendor. And I'm like, I've thought more than once about getting it. I'm not spending that kind of money on it. And they say because it's so popular in Korea that they're an American distributor is trying to get it over here. I'm like, a Pokemon Splendor? Okay, I got to catch them all, right? You know, so anyway. Yeah,
that
theme
awesome.
Is a little bit better than the pasted-on Renaissance theme of Splendor.
Yeah, and I would be okay with that theme. And maybe it's because we have an affinity to the theme and whatnot.
Yep.
The games that I played recently have no theme to them whatsoever. Jason went medium weight, heavyweight. The beautiful part about Jason's life, there's a lot of beautiful parts to it. But he is married to someone that will also partake in a heavy game with him. And so I am not married to that person. And my spouse... there comes a point of heaviness where she's just out. So I rarely get to like play the heavy, heavy games. For instance, Veiled Fate. I know Lindsay will play Veiled Fate with me, but Veiled Fate's probably not going to play well with two people anyways. And then also, so I'm trying to convince, like, I've got four or five friends that are down for a heavier game, and I'm trying to get a game night organized for them to come over and play. And that way Lindsay will see it, enjoy it, things like that. So we have not actually sat down and played any games at my house recently, but I go to trivia every week. And so we end up getting to trivia at like 6:30 and trivia didn't start till 7. And so I was like, oh, okay, I'll just bring a game. So last week I brought Tapple, which is, for those of you who are familiar, it's very party game. It's exactly what it is. You've probably seen it on like social media and everything. It looks like a giant wheel, and it has the alphabet on the outside in these like black keys. It's a blue circle with these black keys. And then it has like category cards that will be like sports or television shows, things like that. So you start the timer, and then you pick a letter, and you're like P for like sports, P, pickleball. So I click that one down, and then I hit the center, and it gives a 10-second timer to the person to my left. And they have to pick a different letter, and then they knock it down.
Yep.
And you go until you either don't answer during your time, or if you push them all down, what we just decided was you reset, but you can't repeat anything. And so it comes with a bunch of stuff. Super party game friendly. Very, very fun for like a, okay, we've got or like we're waiting on people to arrive. You can just have Tapple out. Like it now is in the living room, and it just sits underneath a side table as a like, okay, this is really fun. I saw it on some like random deal on Amazon. It was like 50% off. Decided to buy it. Super, super fun. Very light there. And then the other one, a friend named John Acton, who listens to the show, actually got me a board game for Christmas called How Well Do You Know Your Family? And we tried to like somewhat play it with family over Christmas. And we realized that like it asks questions that if you are a grown adult and you go to play with like your parents or whatever, you realize there are questions in here that they probably have no idea what the answer is. Like, what's my favorite song? And my parents are looking at me like, I don't know. I don't know what kind of music you listen to. So I decided to try it out with my friends that I go play trivia with every week. And then we also hang out throughout random parts of the week. And it was a super fun time. So it's trivia adjacent, and you throw out a question, people answer. And whoever answers correctly, they get the card. It's a point.
Yeah.
Whoever has most points at the end wins. And if no one gets it, then you either give it to who's closest or vice versa. So super, super light. I didn't go anywhere near as deep in the depth department as Jason did. But that's okay, because I think that's the beauty of board games, right? Is you don't have to always play. Sometimes life doesn't allow you to play Teotihuacan 2 days in a row.
For sure. And that's what's great. You said it, but what's great about life in board gaming and about our podcast is that we do your, you just said you're more into theme to help you out. I'm very much a mechanics guy. I do not, in general, play party games at all. I will rarely, if ever, bring out a party game unless it's a reason for that. And when we say party game, those lighter weight games like Tapple, like How Well Do You Know Your Family, like Great British Baking Show. For a game night, when it's me, you, and Elizabeth, I would never ask to bring that out because we're gamers, yeah, right? But when we come to the Birdie Fam get-together or when we have a foundation thing or anything like that, I would definitely have some of those to try to break that ice with people to kind of see what gaming can be. And that's what makes gaming great. Because I am a certified board game snob, let's be clear. I work on it. I have meditations to get better at not being so bad about it. From the very beginning, you know, some of the games we talk about, like if you called it Uno something, I would never play it. But if you call it Scout, I'm there, you know, even though it could be the same thing. So I acknowledge I'm working on that. Like we even had, I think it was on one of our videos, somebody asked about Birdie Pro, or it may have been in Discord. I can't remember. So, and I was like, hey, it's the best disc golf board game out there. Let's be clear. Yeah. It's very clunky. And there's a lot of dice rolling, but you know, I'm a board game snob. And so if somebody wanted to play that, I would play it with them. But I'd say, hey, there's about 33 other games that we can play instead of Birdie Pro if you want to play that. But if you really want to play it, and I applaud the folks who put it out there. That's not me bashing the game. It's just it's hard to replicate disc golf, a sport that we love in a game. Like we totally, that's why there's not a ton of really good sports games because racing is easier. But sports, football, basketball, baseball, they're very hard to replicate in a board game. But that, again, Robbie, I'm glad, thankful that we have that yin and yang to that, that you have the lighter side, the party side. You will do that more than I would, and I'll go heavier. But I'm also, Robbie's 100% correct. I have a wife who, thankfully, in the right mood, will play a lot of games. And sometimes we don't play a lot of games, right? And we're about to come off a fantastic February and play a game every night. So there you go.
That's true. We can, if I end up short on an episode in the future in February, I know that I can just let Jason talk about four games because he's going to play 14 games between episodes. So it's going to be fantastic.
This is true.
But we've got a new game today that we want to talk about. It's not part of the Big Three, but if the Big Three expanded, this one would be right in it.
Absolutely.
So we are talking today about the game called Dominion.
Yeah, it's like Robbie said, it's definitely I say OG a lot, the Big Three. There's no doubt this is on the next tier of the Big Three. And each game, in each episode, we kind of bring those up to you guys. And we actually had a long discussion about which game this should be, right? Because we wanted to talk about deck building. Deck building is a mechanism. If you look back through our games, each game pretty much has a slightly different kind of mechanism, even though some may overlap. And we haven't specifically pointed that out, but each time we talk about a game we want to talk about, it's kind of bringing a new mechanism to that. Quacks of Quedlinburg is kind of a deck builder, but it's a bag builder, and there's more chance with Quacks, but you're still buying things to put into your bag to pull out later. Whereas a deck building game is that same way, and Dominion is that. It's the, we still call it basically the OG deck building game, and that it teaches that mechanism. So you want me to explain the game, Robbie, or do you want to explain it?
I was just going to lead in with we talk about theme. This is a theme that is by far our most repeated theme so far in terms of like the medieval sort of like that's Renaissance true. Vibe because we've had Splendor. Quacks is technically in that realm. Dominion is here. So it's funny because the medieval theme is not one that I traditionally like really look for, but I do think across board games, it has to be one of the like, it has to be up there for like top three in terms of like medieval space and post-apocalyptic. Like, I feel like you hit those three and then, I guess if nature counts as a theme, it probably is the most popular and it's not even close.
But nature's picked up really hard lately. Cause when it's funny you say that about the Arthurian theme, whatever you want to call it, right? The Renaissance theme, because that's what so many early designers of games just latched onto for whatever reason. Because that's what sold a lot of it. That's what sold that. And the other joke you'll hear content creators talk about is trading in the Mediterranean. And so there's a lot of games that deal with that. Mm. And this is part of this could be basically trading in the Mediterranean, that kind of life, that kind of ancient life for sure. So,
Go ahead and explain.
Okay. All right. it's funny. I'm gonna stay off my side tangents, but when we talked about this, I realized I had not played Dominion in a long time, but it was one of our all-time favorite games for sure. So when we got it out, it was easy to pull out and play. But for Liz and I, literally just to pull out and play, and not even talk about, okay, remember this card does this. Okay, we're good. No, we're done because the cards are on there. And it's one of those that I told Robbie, like full disclosure, a little behind the scenes, like I put together show notes. They're usually pretty well, and these are like the worst show notes I've ever put together. But it's almost because I couldn't turn the brain on. It's because I know this game. We talked about this beforehand. Robbie and I know this game so well that we literally didn't even need show notes to talk about this game. But I will give you some of the key stats and then talk about how the game is played. So Dominion was released in 2008. It's generally considered the first deck building game. There are other deck building games before that, but this is the one that exploded the concept of deck building. Designed by Donald Vaccarino, published by Rio Grande Games, and won The Spill Is Yours. So that's the biggest the game prize you can win in the world is The Spill Is Yours. We talked about in previous podcasts. Plays 2 to 4 players, and the box says it plays in 30 minutes. And I'm going to steal one of Robbie's lines that he talked about beforehand, since I'm already on the mic, is that if for a new game and new players, it's probably on the longer side, maybe 40 to 45 minutes, including the teach a little bit longer because you got to explain some of the mechanisms. Yeah. But once you know this game, especially if you're playing a base set that the cards you know well, 2-player, 3-player, 4-player, it doesn't matter. You could play in 30 minutes. It almost takes as much time to set it up because there's so many things you have to do to set the game, and it is just to play it. We've referenced this with some of the other games we've talked about, but this is one, if you've played it enough, it's almost like that lifestyle game that you just know what to do. I'm going to do this and do this and do this. So in Dominion, essentially it's what we've kind of talked about before, but deck building, traditional deck building games, you start off with everyone starts off with the same deck of cards. In Dominion, you start off with 7 gold cards, 7, they're called coppers, basically monetary value of 1, and then 3 point cards, which are just pure in-game point cards. And on your turn, everyone will draw up 5 cards in your hand. Traditional most deck building games, you play with 5 cards. And then on your turn, you're going to play cards to take actions, playing cards to do stuff. By default, in Dominion, every player has 1 action and 1 buy. So, like, no matter how many cards you have in your hand, unless your cards let you do other stuff, you're going to be able to buy 1 thing and take 1 action. And an action could be draw 3 cards. An action could be like, hey, plus 1 more action because maybe you have another action card in your hand. So that's what, in the gameplay, that's what the cards do for you. But you all start with the same, and then you use your money to buy more cards. Dominion will have 10 sets of cards, 10 stacks of cards out in front of you, and each of those stacks have 10 cards, and those cards do a variety of things. So on your turn, you're going to play your cards, buy more cards that go in your discard pile, and then when your main deck runs out, you shuffle it, and now you draw 5. And now you're pulling in more of those cards you've bought that let you do other things. That's the basics of deck building games. You're getting more cards that give you more capabilities during the game to take more actions as you play them. In Dominion, you can buy any of the 10 sets of cards that let you do stuff, any more money cards. There's a 1 money, a 2, and a 3. It's a copper, a silver, and a gold. And the silver costs like 3 copper, and the gold costs like 6. So that way, later on, when you're ready to buy, instead of that 3 comes up and it gives you more buying power. But you also buy in-game points. There's a 1, which is the estate, a 3 points is the duchy, and the 6 point is the province. So you're buying those. Now, the unique thing about deck building is you start stuffing your deck with cards that don't really help you, like point cards during the game. Going a little strategy a little early here, don't really help you. So you may not buy those point cards earlier, but you need to buy them as the game goes. For Dominion, once 3 stacks have been emptied, any 3 stacks, the game ends immediately. No other turns. Or once all the province cards, the 6-point cards are gone, on that person's turn, the game immediately ends. And you count your point cards in your hand. Person with the most points wins. That's basically Dominion. So I'll go a little deeper in that. Is there anything? Is there any key element that I missed, Robbie?
Yeah, I think one of the things that you hit that's like super important is the starting deck. Everyone has the same starting deck, which is 7 coppers and 3 estates. So you start out. Everybody has 3 points, yep, like right off the bat, and so you're all on the same level there, which is really nice. And when you draw, you're going to draw 5 cards. So if you think about it, you got 10 cards in your deck. You could on the first turn draw and have 5 spending power, yep, which is amazing to go ahead and get started and head into the market. Cause you can be like, awesome, I can go ahead and buy a really big card. Great. But then you know on your next turn, based on what's in your deck, you're only going to have two spending power because you're going to have to draw the final five cards. And something Jason mentioned was really cool. Like when you talk about a Quax where you're doing a bag builder, I can statistically stack my bag as well as I want. I can buy the right, like we talk about there's chapters in that game that change the powers. And in chapter one, which is the beginner chapter, the blue is so overpowered. It's insane. So I could buy all blues. Every time that I get the chance to buy, I'm buying a blue and I'm putting it in my bag. But when I'm drawing, when my friend Josh played Quax, or when I played the last time I played Quax, it didn't matter what was in my bag because I was drawing those white cherry bombs every single time. So like, I don't even get to the other ones. Whereas on a deck builder, you can get unlucky in terms of like how the cards are coming up, but eventually you're going to see every card in your deck, which is really cool. So to me, deck builders versus bag builders, the beauty of them is in a pure deck builder, you can really have a lot of control over how the game's going simply because you're going to see every single card. And you can also make informed decisions, such as if I have five spending power on the first turn, I can easily know, okay, next turn I'm tracking, I'm only going to have two spending power. Does that let me buy anything? Or am I basically just going to get to my next turn and automatically pass it? Because I'm not like, you don't start with any actions. So having an action right off the bat doesn't matter until you get to your first like shuffle. It is a really cool aspect for that. Another thing that Jason mentioned, you can have 10 cards that make the market. So the money cards of the copper, silvers, and golds, those are going to be in every single game. You're also going to have the victory point cards in every single game. You're also going to have curses, which is minus 1 point that can be put into decks. That is going to be like those seven cards. Every single game you play of Dominion, those are going to be available. Where it gets tricky is in the base set. I didn't look this up. I have no idea how many. Do you know how many cards come in like just the base, Jason?
I have the rules here so I can look to see if it says there are 24 action cards.
Okay. Yeah. So you have these 24 action cards that you're going to pick 10 of them. They recommend 10 for the first time you play. And if you watch any teaching video, one thing, I don't know if Jason does this, but before we ever do an episode, I always go and try to like YouTube how to play this game to see how other people teach it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just because like, okay, like I want to make sure we're covering it well. And everyone that tries to teach this game all say like, you should just start with the base 10 cards that they tell you to start with and all that. But those 10 cards, those can change every single game because there's like a deck that has all 24 of those action cards and you shuffle it up and then you deal 10 out and then that is your market for the game.
Yep.
And to me, that is so fascinating.
Oh, for sure. Like it's the replayability because of that is just off the charts, almost more than almost any other game we've talked about because the variability, because with 24 different action cards, your setup in the base game can be so different so many times. You can handpick what you, if you want to go big money, if you want to go big attack, if you want to go big action, whatever that is, as you learn the cards, or just go pure randomizer and see how it works. And we did one, Elizabeth and I played 3 or 4 times over the last few days, and I did the base set just to do it, right? And then I was going to do another set, and I was like, well, I don't really like some of those cards, so I handpicked them different. And of course, when we played, Elizabeth hated it. She's like, you picked those for you. I'm like, we're playing the same cards? It's like, okay, well, I'll just do another one. And then we picked another one and followed what it said. But there's ones like in the rule book, it has, if you want, I think what it is, if you want a more, the first game, here's the ones they suggest. If you want big money, here's the ones they suggest. If you want interaction, i.e. attacking each other, we haven't talked about that other than Robbie mentioning the curses. So what's funny is, you know, I'm not a take that person. So I've, even though there's witches in this and even the expansions, I never play with those because I just don't like, with especially because we played this a lot when the kids were young. And so we just didn't play anything that was attacking. And then we never play with curses. Like, I even forgot that curses automatically come out. But anyway, so we don't play with curses. And so you, step back for this. I don't know if I can't remember if we've talked about this in person or on a podcast, but you are always free, and it took me a while to realize this, to do house rules to make a game better for you and your family. Not necessarily to break the game, but to make it better, right? They've worked very hard to set the game up in specific rules. And for me, for years, I was like, I'm not going to change that at all. But I've totally changed that in certain things. The most common thing I've changed, and this is not tied to Dominion, but it's just a little, you know, get on my soapbox, is some games say, okay, here's three bonus cards at the beginning of the game, choose one now. And then you have to start with that from the beginning. And so this is my bonus card to go for eggs or something, or go for this kind of bird. But if Wingspan, you never see that, you're now stuck with that one. Whereas I house rule it, Wingspan's a 4-round game, that after the second round, you can choose which bonus you want to go with. Just think it's a little more fair. It's a little more fun. Pure house rule. And so for us, we house ruled that we just never play with curses. I mean, that's not really a house rule. That's a Jason rule. But I love that variability in Wingspan. I love the very best, the secure thing about Wingspan in Dominion, because there are 24 different action cards that can do so many different things. And what can be, I'll get back off my tangent, the randomizer, if you randomize it, you could realize, oh, wow, some of these cards work unbelievably well together and you're just going crazy big, or they don't quite work well together, but the ego and arrogance in me is like, I'm going to make them work together. And I love that challenge because there are so many different cards for sure. You know, one thing I didn't talk about was when I slightly mentioned it, that the teach of this is actually fairly quick, because the concept we explain, like in person, it's easier to explain. Okay, you're going to draw your five and then you're going to play. And based on what you have, you're going to take actions or buy stuff. It's really explaining what the actions are. And the actions, for the most part, for the basic cards, are pretty easy. Like I pulled out like the smithy. If you play the smithy action card, it's just, and I'll show, hold it up from our YouTube folks, it's just +3 cards. So your action is drawing three more cards. So you would do that for maybe getting more money in your hand. Or if you have additional actions you've already played that you could do, then that works out. For example, the village is +1 card, but +2 actions. So my action was playing this. Now I have two more actions, so I could play two more action cards, and I could play a card like the market. This is my favorite card in the entire game. The market is +1 card, which means you draw another card, +1 action, +1 buy, and then +1 gold for that thing. So one copper technically. So this, those actions are easy to understand. What challenges come up when you have these unique cards. Like I peered out the bureaucrat, because I don't think I've ever played with a bureaucrat till the other day. And the bureaucrat is, you gain a silver. So you gain a two strength money card. But your opponent must reveal a victory card in their hand. So they must reveal one of the green cards. If they have one, they now put that on the top of their deck, which means they're guaranteed on their next hand to draw that. Or if they play a card that says draw a card, you know what they're drawing, and they're going to draw back the card they don't want. So that's where newer players, it's easy to understand that, but there's enough cards that are unique that explaining that. My whole point of that is explaining some of these unique cards at the beginning of this game. But once you see it played, it's like, oh, that totally makes sense. There's nothing super complicated in that. The teach is 10 to 15 minutes, and most of that is explaining the cards. And then you get going. And this is one among many other games that once you see, oh, okay, I get it now. To conceptualize, I'm going to play cards and then buy more cards. Then I'm going to play cards and then buy more cards. Then I'm going to play cards. It's like, and then it just becomes just like anything else with playing cards. So I love that. And the strategy that goes along with those things is so varied. You could go big with money. Like I'm going to get a lot of money early so I can hit money big and buy expensive cards. Cause the action cost cards cost anywhere from like 2 up to 5 or 6. And so that dictates what cards you're able to buy for that. Or you buy more money, or you buy the point cards. The province cost 8. So do you go big with points, knowing you're going to fill your deck? Do you go big with action cards? Because I want to take more actions, but you got to make sure you have cards that work. Elizabeth had one card that we played that allowed you to choose another card in your hand to do twice. And she didn't get to use it a single time. And we used that same card the next game, and I got to use it over and over and over. I got to use it twice on the smithy, and I got to draw 6 cards. I got to use it twice. I mean, it was just, when it hits, it's so exciting when those things hit. And that strategy could change real time. Like, I'm going to go this way, but I'm going to pivot because those cards aren't coming up. But now I see, oh, this is going to give me more buying power, so I'm going to buy more. What is your experience with that? I mean, do you have a specific strategy you typically go for, or do you like change it up from game to game?
Yeah, so this is a game that I'll show my hand, and that this game is so near and dear to my heart. Because when my friends and I discovered board gaming in college, two of them ended up living together my junior year, and one of them was like really close. And like he lived just down the hall from them in a different dorm than me. And the three of them loved Dominion beyond a shadow of a doubt. So they bought pretty much every expansion that existed for Dominion. So I really think if I hadn't have played Wingspan as much as I have, and I hadn't have played Smash Up with Lindsay as much as I have, Dominion sitting at number three for my most played game of all time. Mm. And I only think the reason Dominion might honestly still be the top. Like, even with me playing Wingspan almost every night for the past like 3 months, I've played Dominion so many times. Yep. So when you're talking about, like, you're saying, oh, the bureaucrat, I'm like, yep. Mm-hmm. I have been burned by it so many times, because the bureaucrat works really well when your opponents are just trying to win the game with victory points. Yep. So they are like, they're buying gold and they're buying victory points, and they're not really caring about the market whatsoever. And so that's fine, because they're just doing their thing. But then if the bureaucrat's there, you immediately know, well, junk, I can't do that this game, because I'm going to have green in my hand every single time. So like, that's not going to work, because then I'm not going to cycle my deck and I'm done. So I would say there are so few strategies that we haven't seen done. So it very much, it depends. The things that I paid the most attention to are who's sitting next to me, how do they like to play, and like, okay, so that's happening, and then what's on the board, because you adjust accordingly, and every expansion just adds more cards that can come into the market and things like that. Yep. So personally, I'm with Jason in terms of I love extra actions, so there's nothing like the satisfying feeling of being able to mill your own deck with, like, I'm going to play the market. Okay, I got a plus one action. I get plus one card. Awesome. I'm going to play, like, you're doing all this different stuff, and you're like, oh, by the way, I played 10 cards. Like, I burned through 10 cards every single turn going through my deck. And any deck builder game, whoever mills the most effectively usually wins. Yep. Like, whoever sees the most cards almost always wins. So that's like a nice strategy to hold to it. But personally, I love the money strategy in this game. Yep. Like, I could, for a long time, I was the curse giver. Like, I was just dealing out curses to people left and right, because I love take that actions. And yeah. I'm here for, you're talking about a guy, Jason, that I played video games. As a middle schooler, I played World of Warcraft, literally hoping I would make people log off because they were so frustrated. Like, that is so core to my personality. Oh my, but I kept being the curse giver, and it was like, I would try to bring them down, but I wasn't really even building myself up in the process. So we would end games with like 9 points each, and it was like, okay, well, that's not fun. No one enjoyed this because we lost so much.
It's so interesting you say that, because I don't think I've ever actually, because I'm looking over here, I don't think I've ever actually played a game with a curse, because I didn't play it when the kids were younger. And I think they played Dominion a lot and they started adding the curses, because we bought Dominion, the base set, is a 2 to 4 player game. I'm a family of five. And so we bought Intrigue because the Intrigue expansion has some rules to expand it to 5 to 6 players. So we bought an Intrigue for that very reason. And I'll show you when you come up next, you can see which cards, this is the way it is with any deck builder. Like, I have not played anywhere near as you, because there are some cards I literally have never played in Dominion. Part of that is because when we got Dominion, We got it when we first really got into gaming, and we played it a ton along with the other games we played a ton with. But as I found other games, I just realized I wasn't coming back to Dominion. Not that anything was wrong with Dominion. It's still in the BGG, Board Game Geek's top 100 of all time. The Dice Tower just did their top 100, and a couple people had it in their top 100. It's that great for a reason. But there were just other games that were appealing to me more. And I'm a deck building guy. I love deck building. But when I look over, I'm like, oh, wow, my curses look brand new. But the market, wow, those cards are worn out because I don't sleeve my cards. And then they're in your hand so much, you can tell the difference between which cards have been played a lot out of mine, as well as my intrigue set as well. Because I would come back. It's the same way. When I first got into gaming, I didn't do a lot of variability, and I was nowhere near the board game geek I am now. And so I would just play. We'd play the same set, or just play whatever sets they recommended in the game. The big money one, because that's fun to go big money, or the regular one. And so that's just a foreign thing for me. So at some point I'll have to play it that way. And maybe that's how Elizabeth beats me, is we play with the curses, you know? So maybe we do that for Fantastic February when you come up. Cause you'll end up playing some of the games with us, but those games will be purely point-based games so that we can see from there. But, yeah, it's that I keep coming back to it. And it's so funny because when you talk about how you knew the bureaucrat, and I love the bureaucrat, but never use it. That's just the variability of the game. There are some cards in here I've never played with, and for no good reason. This is a game that you could play two people, three people, four people can play 30 minutes and then step another game and then play another. And in an hour and a half, 2 hours, played this game 3 to 4 times, if that's how much you like it. Seven Wonders was that for me for a long time, for sure. Cause we had a group that we played Seven Wonders with because it just went so fast. Dominion could be that way, but the variability in Dominion is so great, and it's so fun because it is fun, like you said, to have that big run. Like I took a photo and sent to you where I played a card that gave me two actions to play another one, and I had this basically like this little card tree, and I have this great photo I'll put on Instagram after we drop this after this episode drops that shows there's a card here and there's two cards from there, and we basically just to help us keep up with our actions, we basically just do a card tree right down from there to remember. Okay, got one action. Okay, I got two actions this card. I just used an action. Now I have one more action. I cover that up. And to have those big cards and the big money and like, oh, yeah, I'm going to buy a province and a duchy. And there's 9 points just like that. It's awesome if you have those buys. So I'm glad we did this because I definitely was voting on other stuff based on our chat. But when you said it, I was like, of course, we got to talk about it. It's the OG. It's still beloved for a reason. And you can't go wrong with it. I'm not going to say downside, but it's going to be one of the more expensive games I've seen for us that does not go on sale a lot. It will go on sale, but it does not go on sale a lot. Its MSRP is $50. And even right now, or at least yesterday, it was $45 on Amazon. You can see the here and there sale, but it's not one that's routinely lower. But I've used this term way too much. I'm beating a dead horse, but it's the variability in that play. It's one that I think Robbie and I are both comfortable saying $50 is a lot. We know that's a lot.
Yeah.
This game will give you well more than $50 worth of play in comparison to other games. Yes, it's a lot. Yeah. It's definitely an investment, but the gameplay you can get out of it, the variety of gameplays you can get out of it, it plays good. 2-player, 3-player, 4-player plays good at all of those. If you do the curses, it's a little tougher at 2-player because you're only going after each other. But for everything that's not purely attacking, and there's only a handful of attacking cards in the game, 2-player is great. Because you're just seeing how well, what strategy you're going to go after. Like there were sometimes Liz and I literally almost took the same action, buying the same things because we had the same money that pop up. Or we could have the same money pop up, but I really want the market and she really wants the smithy or whatever it may be. And it's so fun to see how that strategy plays out and how well those cards come up in your hand.
Yeah, it is just the raw variability of it. You talk about house rules. So my friends and I, like I said, we've played this so many times that like, I truly believe scoring and everything, we could play a game in sub 20 minutes by the time we were done. And it was because we knew this game so well. You saw I told Jason before we even started recording this, like, I don't have to see what the card, like what it says at the bottom. I graduated from college 10 years ago. And when I can still look at the pictures, like when he held them up to show them, the picture showed first. And before it even got to like, oh, this is what's on the bottom. I was like, oh yeah. Bummer. Like it's just so ingrained in my memory. So we can play super fast. So our house rule was always when we just had the base set, we were playing this basically every day when we had just the base set at first. And our house rule was you do the randomizer, you deal 10 cards out. And then you take those 10 cards and you take the remaining 14 cards of the randomizer and you deal 10 more out. So that way you cannot repeat the same game that you just played. Because that's one thing, like I've talked about when we talked about Smash Up. Smash Up, technically, you're supposed to snake draft as you go through, to build your two faction combo.
Yep.
But Lindsay and I found that to be super boring. So we have like chips that have every single faction on it, and you deal those out, because then sometimes you're like, I think this combo could work really well, and it doesn't. Or sometimes you find a super overpowered combo that works really well together. And that was our thing with Dominion, was how much variability it comes through. When I think about what's down there and games I've purchased, things like that. Like I think about a Machi Koro that we talked about two episodes ago. And like Machi Koro is fantastic. Machi Koro comes in at like $25 or $30, I think, or something like that.
Yep.
And at $30, I'm like, okay, it's good. It's worth the price of it. I would wait for it to be on sale.
Yep.
This doesn't go on sale very often for a reason. And I think that is important to note. Like the reason it doesn't go on sale is because people should still buy it, because it is just that good of a game. And like, if you find someone who's a Dominion player, you're not going to see them with just one Dominion box.
Yep.
You're going to see the stack of all the Dominion boxes piled on top of each other, and you're just going to know, like, they're a Dominion player through and through. And I think it's important to also note, when we talked about deck builders, we referenced this conversation Jason and I had off air, but like, when we talked about deck builders, this came out in 2008, and you could not convince me that it did not have an influence on the board gaming community overall, because there are lots of deck builders that took a similar vibe and just amplified it. So like, we have another builder that we really want to cover that I've played with Jason, and I didn't play until the first time, like last year I played it for the first time, and it's amazing. Like, it's so fun. But we felt like if you go play it, and like we started there, Dominion could in theory at its base set feel like a step backwards. And I think that Dominion is good enough to stand on its own, especially because there's so many expansions that come with it or like go alongside of it. I will say, from the theming standpoint, it sounds to me like my vibe from how you described Teotihuacan in terms of the theme is there, but it's not like you could easily forget about the theme and just think about it as blank actions.
Right.
That's how I feel about this game. Like, I love the idea of buying estates, buying victory points, and the theming of the cards themselves. Like, I go to the market and that presents me with a multitude of extra options. That makes a ton of sense for that to fit that card. The bureaucrat wants to talk about land and estates and things like that. He highlights that. Very clever done there.
Yep.
So the intentionality of the actions to action cards, phenomenal. But you could look at that's the very core of it. You could look at the extra parts and be like, you called it curses because you needed a way to have it take that action built in there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's definitely less, everything you say is true and I agree with, it's less pasted on than other stuff. But you don't got to pick a crazy leap to think of a smithy as giving you more three more cards, or you're going to the market to do more stuff, right? But it's not crazy, crazy, crazy. And what's funny is, and we're going to jump to our rating here in a second. So the statement you said about if you find a Dominion player, you're not going to find just one box, you're going to find many boxes, is true, which is also why for me, you will only find two boxes. You will find the base game and Intrigue. Yeah. And we only got Intrigue because it was at the time the one you bought to go up to 5 to 6 players so that I could play with all my kids. And Dominion now has a second edition. I think almost all the cards are same, but the art's a little different. And if you found a first edition game, you would be just fine with that. But it does have a second edition game out there. And that's the one that we say is priced. The first edition is not even in print. So if you really wanted to be a collector, you'd have to pay more for that one because that's actually more expensive. And I still have the first edition. I was looking through Amazon and we bought ours in 2015. So we bought it years after it already come out, but it's when we really were going deep into games for our second wave. But for me, Dominion, it without doubt, I will foot stomp what Robbie said. All deck building games to this day, the deck building games I love, owe everything they have to Dominion. Dominion is the one that set up the concept of your initial deck is 10 cards. Why is it not 12? Why is it not 8? It's 10. Your initial hand is 5. Why is it not 3? Why is it not 4? It's 5. Dominion plowed that road and gave us so many capabilities for what deck building could be. Like I said, I think you'll have the hardcore people say, well, this was the first, this was the fact. Those don't matter. This was the one that made deck building part of the board game world, part of the tabletop game culture, and definitely influenced every other deck building game from there. Deck building is one of my favorite mechanisms. Clank is the game Robbie and I play together. Dune Imperium is the next. Oh, I love Dune Imperium. So great. It's one that it's on high on the list for us to show Robbie when he comes up. Deck building game has more than deck building. It takes the basic deck building, but amps it up with all this other stuff, right? But Dominion teaches you that concept of deck building, lets you understand how it flows, how it feels, and is a lot of fun. Like, I love the fact, I say on this podcast all the time, playing cards to do stuff. That's probably my favorite single thing to do. Playing a card lets me do stuff. Well, that's all Dominion is. It's literally playing a card to do stuff. Then draw 3 more cards. Take an action, have more buy power, buy 2. And so now I get to buy these things. That's what Dominion does for you. And I love it for that reason. But, right, we need to be very honest here, right? For a newcomer, this is great. 100%, I would say this, if you want to get a deck building game, this is the game for a newcomer to get, a beginner gamer to get, because you have so much variety, so much replayability, so much game in it, so quick of a game. You can leave it out on your, you can leave, Dominion could be similar, left out on your table. And what you said with your friends was great. Set up 10 and then set up 10 more, already have those ready to go so that you know you're going to have back-to-back different games.
Yeah.
That's what's all great about Dominion. But for me, and I even realized early when I was playing Dominion, once I found the other stuff just appealed to me more. So my rating is definitely, it's a sure cookie for sure. A game that's good and I will happily play when everybody wants to bring it out. But I will, for me, again, I'm rating this at a stance, so I'm much different with how I do my gaming. But if I bring people over, unless they're total newbie gamers who've never gamed, I could bring Dominion out. But otherwise, I'd bring out something like Clank or something else that's a little more elevated I know they can handle for that. It's a great game. Me rating the sugar doesn't, you know, that's a lower rating, but that doesn't mean it's bad. It's actually really good. I love sugar cookies. Dominion's a great game. It's an all-timer. It's in the top 100 for BGG for a reason. You can't go wrong if you get Dominion. Mine's a sugar cookie. Robbie, what you got?
Yeah. I thought about this one a lot. Like this, because so far, I'm trying to think. We've both passed out 2 double doozies at this point. I'm pretty confident because I believe you gave. Did you give Downforce a double doozy?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you gave Downforce and we both gave Quacks a double. Quacks was obviously our first double doozy. And then I gave Herstory a double doozy. And so we're even. And I was like, okay, is this where I tilt the scale in favor of me giving more double doozies? And like, is Dominion worth it to me? And the hard part is I agree with Jason in terms of like, if someone were to come over and they want to play a deck builder, I could see why you would want to jump to Clank. I could see why you would want to jump to a Dune Imperium, especially if they have experienced things like that, because it takes its deck building and then some.
Yep. Yep.
Like that's, and to me, that's the hard part about not calling it a double doozy in my heart, is because I can see why those earn the double doozy. But when I think if there is a double doozy deck builder out there, it's got to be Dominion in my head. So I'm going to call it a double doozy because I just think from the deck building mechanics, if you want to become, I'll say this, if you want to become like a more efficient strategic thinker when it comes to the deck building genre, this is such a good game.
Absolutely.
To help you take those steps, because you're going to have varied options every single time you play. And even especially the more you get used to it and you do the randomizer instead of trying to build combinations and stuff before you even get going. But another really fun part is like, okay, Jason, Elizabeth, and I are going to play Dominion. Awesome. We're going to go ahead and agree. We're going to play 3 games of it. And Jason gets to build the market for one of them. I get to build the market for another, and Elizabeth gets to build the market for the third time. So you can even try to build a market to a strategy that you think is going to work and see if you can just execute it better than everyone else out there on the table. Yep. Like, there's strength to that. So it's just truly that replayability. When we talked about Dominion, I pushed hard for this to be here. So I do feel like I also got to defend it with a double doozy there. Yeah. But I just, from the pureness of the game, it's so good and it's so easy to play, yep. Which to me, if you like Smash Up itself, I love it. It's one of my favorite games of all time. Smash Up is overwhelming to jump into for lots of people because you don't know the decks. You don't know the combinations. You don't know to anticipate for other people. Dominion, all the facts are right in front of you. Like, you're going to see, oh, snap, Jason's buying gacha cards. He's going against his natural inclination, and he's buying a bunch of gacha cards. So I got to prepare for that, or I got to also buy gacha cards, but there's only 10 of them out there. So if Jason has four of them in his deck, we're all going to, if he ends up with six, there's literally no way that we can get him back as much as he's getting us, kind of a deal. So you can pivot on the fly. It's just, it is. Yeah. I cannot say enough good things about this game.
One thing that kind of hit me when you were talking there was that if I'm giving a recommendation, so say we did, I know I did Clank for starting. That was my deck building game last week. We talked about it 2 weeks ago. But more often than not, mine's going to be based on the person, right? So I'll state this in a clear way. If I'm recommending a game for folks to learn deck building, it will probably be Dominion more often than not, depending on who that player is. If it's a brand new player, take Dominion because it's going to teach you, as you said, it's going to teach you so many things about deck building. It'll teach you so many things about games in general. Like, it doesn't seem like it in real time, but it's teaching you different mechanisms for other games, taking different actions, buying stuff, getting to do more things as opposed to just playing cards to do stuff. It starts prepping you for those heavier games like Clank, where you're playing a card to move and do something and pick something up self. Or like Dune Imperium, where you're placing a worker, let you do this. It's that basis for that. So for me, it's easy to recommend to brand new players and newer players that Dominion would be that deck building game because of that reason. I even mentioned Clank of that, but it's not a bad one to start with. But for me, Dominion can't go wrong for a newer player. So it could easily interchange for that for sure. So I think that's a good rating for sure. If you had asked me again, if you asked me when I bought this game, it would be a double duty for sure. Like in 2015, 2016, me playing my kids, we played it so much. We loved it. The cards are so worn out because we played the game so many times. Double duty for sure, without doubt. So it's an easy recommend as a purchase.
Yeah. And that's, I think it, the nostalgia of it will always hold a personal, like that will elevate the game. And that's something about board games in general. Like when it is ingrained into our opening of our show here, welcome to the table. Like there are memories that you just get from this hobby that are so cool of the storytelling moments, the here, the now. Like if I got into birding, and I like was ever around a Eurasian nutcracker, immediately me, Brad, Jason, Elizabeth, Kimberly, we're all thinking about it because the first time we played Wingspan, there was a fun moment where we all I misread it. Everyone else misread it. No one's correcting me. We got to the end. It was like, wow, Robbie slaughtered us. Oh, cause I cheated accidentally, but I cheated. I misplayed the card. So that win has an asterisk to it. Awesome. But like the Eurasian Nutcracker is just, it's there locked into my head, and Dominion sits there. So let us know if you're watching this and you made it to this part of the episode, let us know games that you have, like just fond memories of playing it, doing this, like, especially if you're in the hobby gaming world of, oh, we've played this and yada, but it could be a man, there's just nothing like, I remember a game of playing Monopoly with my mom and my sister, and man, like she couldn't roll doubles one more time or else she's going to jail. And she did. And that ended up costing her the whole thing, right? Like there's beautiful moments. So we'd love to hear your gaming stories in the comments and the reviews, things like that, because when we welcome you to the table, that's what we're here for. We're here to make memories and have a great time.
Definitely. We definitely want to hear those things. Whenever you say that, I always start thinking about that. Have some of those games that have that, you know, emotional connection for sure that we always love because of that, because of those emotions and those feelings tied to it and those experiences and memories. So nothing wrong with that at all. Even if it's Monopoly, yeah. Hunter Thomas.
Even if it's Monopoly. Yeah. So we want to say thank you so much for tuning in to this episode. And we have enjoyed discussing Dominion with you. There's a link in the description if you're interested in checking it out. But in the meantime, we hope you have an amazing rest of your day and make it fantastic for someone else too. But we will see you in 2 weeks for episode 12.
See you then.